in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the May 6th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. This is a historic day in athletics. 66 years ago, on May 6th, 1954, the late British athlete Roger Bannister became the first human being to run a mile in under 4 minutes. Bannister's barrier-breaking performance at the Oxford University track has set our own athletics reporter, the energetic Andy Edwards, on his latest path of reflection. Andy says he's been thinking about the significance of Bannister's achievement, along with the rise of the middle and long-distance runners of Africa in the Olympic Games of the 1960s. Andy likes nothing better than a chat over a cup of tea in his North London home. I think I can hear Andy's whistling kettle now. So sporty greetings once again from Washington, Andy.
And greetings from London, Sonny. Well, yes, this period of lockdown because of the pandemic finds me often sitting in my office at home, looking through the shelves of books about athletics and sport in general, which I've gathered over the years. And two themes have caught my eye. The quest to break 4 minutes for the mile on the track, which captured the attention of the athletics world in the mid-1950s, and the transformation in the distance events at the Olympic Games in the 1960s, culminating at the Games in Mexico City in 1968, where so many of the leading performers were African. What also struck me was that there was one coach who provided a link between the two, and that was an Austrian by the name of Franz Stampfl. He advised Roger Bannister in breaking the four-minute mile and coached the Australian runner, Ralph Dubell, who surprised the Kenyan favourite Wilson Kiprugut in the Mexico City 800 metres 14 years later.
Andy, how would you describe this Austrian coach?
Uncompromising, adamant in his beliefs to the point of making as many enemies as friends, and that was wherever he worked as a coach in athletics, very much an individual who would discuss his passions for art, music and literature after coaching sessions as much as any theories about athletics. A difficult man in many ways, but also a survivor, literally, who escaped when the Nazis took over Austria in 1938, was initially interned in Britain as an enemy alien when he arrived, and since he was Austrian and he was a German speaker. Then put on a ship with almost 2,000 other fellow internees in 1940, torpedoed and survived hours hanging onto a life raft in the Atlantic Ocean before being rescued. Another boat took him to Australia. He joined the army and served in World War II before returning to Britain and coaching in London after the war.
Andy, he sounds memorable indeed. A hard taskmaster, but also inspirational. Andy, why was breaking 4 minutes for the mile such a big deal in athletics in the 1950s? These days, there are few mile races. We tend to talk more about the 1,500 meters and the current world record for the mile, 3 minutes and 43 seconds, is still held by the Moroccan Hicham El Guerrouj, set 21 years ago.
This was before the days when the metric system came to be accepted in much of the world. The mile was one of the glamour distances. It was also perfect in terms of reporting for radio and television, or as it was in those days, newsreel, offering a rounded story, but within a few minutes. The best men runners around the world had the four-minute barrier in their sights. In effect, that meant an average of 60 seconds per lap. In the mid-1950s, the latest attempt by a man to break 4 minutes was headline news around the world.
Andy, you've set the scene for us. By the early 1950s, Franz Stompfel from Austria is back in Britain and pursuing his dream of being a paid professional coach, highly unusual at the time. He coaches just about every event in track and field, not just the running disciplines. Andy, how does he meet the future record breaker, Roger Bannister?
Bannister was a medical student in his final year of studies, as well as being one of the best middle distance runners in the world at the time. He's based at the Paddington Hospital in West London, and from his recent time as a student at Oxford University, he knows Chris Chataway, a fellow international runner, and Chris Brasher, who studied at Cambridge. And if the name of Brasher sounds familiar, yes, it's the same man who co-founded the London Marathon, which was first run in 1981. These two, Chataway and Brasher, had already met Stumpfel and were being coached by him at a track in West London. Both were aiming for international honours in the Commonwealth Games, European Championships and Olympic Games. And so was Roger Bannister, but as a medical student, he believed he knew how his body worked and he didn't need a coach as such. It seems he went along mostly because his friends, Chataway and Brasher, were already attending. But what Bannister later said, and so did others throughout Franz Stumpfel's coaching career, was that this Austrian could, and I quote, get inside your head and make you believe you could achieve your goal. In modern terms, he was a supreme motivator, but with a sharp eye for technique, he was much more than just a lot of noise.
Andy, the story moves to May 6, 1954, at the Oxford University track at Iffley Road. Roger Bannister becomes the first to break 4 minutes for the mile, helped by Chris Chataway and Chris Brasher as pacemakers. The official time in the days before digital clocks is 3:59.4. Bannister is a national hero and wins the Commonwealth and European titles in the same year. He also passes his final year exams to qualify as a medical doctor, retiring from top-level sport and also becoming a distinguished academic. For his part, Franz Stompfel, the coach from Austria, makes his home in Australia, where he coaches many athletes, including their top hope for the Olympic 800 meters in 1968, Ralph Dubell. 1968. Andy, isn't this when the running talent of Africa is emerging?
The world of athletics has taken on a different and wider perspective since the breaking of the 4-minute mile 14 years previously. From Ethiopia comes Abebe Bikila to win the Olympic marathon in Rome in 1960 and retain the title in Tokyo 4 years later. In those same Tokyo Games, Wilson Kiprugut of Kenya takes a bronze medal in the 800 meters, won by Peter Snell of New Zealand. It is still a story of men running. The advances for women runners over the longer distances have yet to be set in motion. The 1968 Olympics are held in Mexico City, a controversial choice to many because this means competing at high altitude. It's believed that those Africans who live at altitude have an unfair advantage.
Andy, let's look back on those 1968 Mexico City Games. Kenya's Kip Keino defeats the USA's Jim Ryan to win the 1500. Keino also wins silver in the 5,000 meters, which is won by Tunisia's Mohamed Gamoudi. The Kenyan Naftali Temu captures gold in the 10,000 meters, while the Ethiopian Mama Walde becomes Olympic marathon champion, the successor to Abebe Bikila. But Andy, what happens in the men's 800 meters final?
Wilson Kiprugut looks strong in the qualifying rounds and goes into the final as favorite. He takes the lead from the gun. The Australian Ralph Dubell, coached by Franz Stumpfel, is at the back. He'd been suffering from Achilles tendon problems for several months before the games, been unable to do speed work, and was not considered a contender. At the bell for the final lap, Kiprugut continues to lead, but on the back straight, Dubel is moving up, and going into the home straight, he's challenging for the lead. He wins the gold medal with a dip on the line. The Olympic Games in Mexico City in 1968 heralded a new age in athletics, what we now take for granted, the sight of African runners, men and women, dominating the distance events. But it also showed the value of the coach, mentor, inspirational voice, call it what you will. The kind of force of nature that was Franz Stampfl. As the record-breaking miler Roger Bannister said 14 years before, he could get inside your head and make you believe you could do it.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards reflecting on Roger Bannister and the Olympic rise of African athletes. And Andy was talking with us from London.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Thanks, Lori. That's my VOA colleague, Lori London. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Germany's top football league, the Bundesliga, will return on May 22nd at the earliest. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is insisting on a two-week quarantine for all clubs. If and when action resumes, the matches are expected to be played in empty stadiums without fans. Germany's neighbors, France and Portugal, have already ended their respective football seasons because of the coronavirus pandemic. With nine matches still to be played in the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich is in first place, 4 points ahead of Borussia Dortmund. Some privately owned football clubs in Nigeria are speaking out about their experiences and welfare of their players during the COVID-19 crisis. Chukwuma Uba is the chairman of FC Ifeanyi Uba, based in Nnewi, Anambra State, Nigeria. It's one of two privately owned clubs in the Nigerian Professional League. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Chukwuma Uba talked about some of the steps the club has taken.
COVID-19 is a global pandemic, so it's not just about FC Fayoba, it's a pandemic that has affected the entire world. So even before we announced to the players of the date for them to go home and reunite with their families, and also advise them on so as to live to the safety protocols, they had already known about it because it was a global news. It was more or less a force majeure, and nobody had control over it. So of course we try keep educating them and telling them to try to do their best to stay at home and even avoid any group trainings and others to try to train privately. It's quite unfortunate, but it's not just a restricted to FC Fayoba, but it's a global thing, so there's nothing anybody could do about it.
Some clubs in the country have put their players and staff on half pay, some even without pay. What's the situation in your team regarding the welfare of your players and staff?
Coming to that, being one of the directors in the league management company, we had a meeting. We actually had two meetings last 2 weeks, or less than 2 weeks ago, to again catch up with each other and share experiences on what has been happening about the pandemic, the lockdown, And we raised that in the meeting, trying to see how we can what we intend doing as individual clubs. So most of the clubs, remember that FC Fayoba is a privately own club, and the other clubs, 18 other clubs are government-owned. So for the government-owned club, their decision was that it's all left to the state government. If the government, the players there are more or less like civil servants. So whatever happens in the system on each of the states is definitely going to happen to the players. Then for the private club, which is FC Fayoba, and of course MFM, which is partially private, though it's a church, we raised on our own concern as well, because we knew that there was this grant that was going to come from FIFA, and we made it clear that if we are to shut down the league as it is, then it's more or less a loss on our own part, because we are spending directly from the pocket, being a private club. Whatever happens, that we'll have to go back to our management and our owners, of course, and have a chat to see how we can, you know, balance the situation. So, as it is, for FC Fayoba, our decisions, we are yet to conclude on our decisions, because we don't even know when it's ending. But we have been in touch with our players and have been doing our best to be of, you know, support to them as well, as it is.
The Nigerian Football Federation says it's planning to resume the league and that it's waiting for approval by relevant government agencies. What's your take on the plans by the NFF to restart the league?
Well, the NFF are not the drivers of the league. Per se. The league management company runs the league, supervises the league, or regulates the league as it is. But we are the ones that run the league. So they will come up with their proposal. We will look at it holistically, and we all will meet at the point. It's not, they can't impose on us, okay, start playing, and we wouldn't consider ourselves. Remember, these are players. They are all human beings. Considering the journeys and everything, we have to look at the time frame they expect us to end up the league and see the possibilities. So we have to first and foremost look at the match schedules before anything. So for now, our decision, including the NFF, is to look at the situations globally and see what is the world best practice, what other people are doing in other times, and so take our own decision.
That's Chukwuma Uba, the chairman of the Nigerian football club, Ifeanyi Uba, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Newi, Nigeria.
Sporting greetings. My name is Chukwuma Uba, chairman FC Ifeanyi Uba Ball Club of Newi, Nigeria. You're listening to the Solid Side of Sports of the Voice of America. Thanks.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, our African Beat host. The coronavirus outbreak has forced sporting events around the world to be either canceled or postponed. And it's forced athletes to mentally cope with interruptions to their training schedules and careers. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, VOA's Gwen Uten reports on the unique mental health challenges the global pandemic presents to some top athletes. Hi, Gwen.
Hey there, Sonny. When American Olympian Simone Biles found out the Tokyo Games were postponed, she broke down and cried. The most decorated gymnast in history said it wasn't her physical health that worried her. She was concerned about the toll on her mental health. The coronavirus outbreak has shed light on the issue of mental health across the globe. In the United States, a recent survey showed over a third of respondents were feeling the negative effects of the pandemic, both mentally and psychologically. In the world of sports, professional athletes face the challenge of not only staying physically fit, but mentally fit as well. And they find themselves with a void to fill, with no competitions to focus on for the indefinite future. Jonas Bear Hoffman is General Secretary for the World Soccer Players Union, FIFPro. He tells Reuters News there is an additional concern for athletes who are already prone to anxiety and depression.
Mental health is a huge consideration. I mean, we have from studies over the last years anyways, we can see that there are elevated numbers in terms of risks for anxiety and different psychological problems of players compared to the general population, probably because quite a high tense and precarious employment for most of them. And clearly these times make this worse.
The coronavirus pandemic has brought football league matches to a standstill, and top players in the biggest clubs have come under pressure to accept wage cuts to help manage costs during the stoppage. But Bayer Hoffman says young athletes who play in smaller leagues are also struggling to make ends meet.
What I think are some of the factors to take into account as well, we have many young individuals who are on their own away from their home countries. They have no family support oftentimes in these countries. Many of them have literally 1 year employment contracts, meaning there's enormous distress about whether they have any kind of income coming the end of the season.
And Bayer Hoffman says women players are especially vulnerable and often have to deal with accommodations that are inferior to their male counterparts.
It is a huge concern, and I think it's also something where we have to look at women's football. We've had quite a few players who play abroad and who oftentimes, because they do so under lesser condition than most of the men who would travel to another country to pursue their career, they're oftentimes on their own. They don't travel with family, they don't have spouses or so sometimes with them, which means they're sitting in a foreign country in a small apartment that the club is providing with hardly any social interaction and no family support nearby. And that creates enormous pressure that we're trying to help them with, and where we're also in many cases are trying to lobby to allow these players, although it's not easy in these times, to travel home and be with their families simply because their well-being is more important than a potential return to practice maybe 2 or 3 days later, which I think in these current circumstances we all know is a long way away anyways.
In an article published by FIFPro entitled Keep Your Mind Sharp, the union reminds players to maintain a healthy lifestyle with adequate sleep and to stay connected with family and friends via social media. FIFPro also advises players to focus on only what they can control and to avoid watching too much news, in particular coverage on the coronavirus, to keep stress levels down. Not bad advice. And that is all from me. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, Bamboozit, D.C.
My name is Jesha Cheptegei of Uganda, a world champion, a Devil Commonwealth Games champion, a world cross country champion, a three-time world record holder of the 5K, 10K, and 15K. My message to the athletes all over the world and other people is that keep a distance and follow the guidelines given to you by your governments and the health ministries, because the COVID-19 is really a serious disease.
I began the show talking with the energetic Andy Edwards about Roger Bannister, the first person to run under 4 minutes for the mile. Bannister clocked 3 minutes and 59.4 seconds on May 6th, 1954, at Oxford University's Iffley Road track. And here are a few facts about Roger Bannister on the anniversary of his record-breaking run. He died 2 years ago at the age of 88 in Oxford, England. Bannister was the first recipient of Sports Illustrated magazine's Sportsman of the Year Award in 1955. Roger Bannister retired from athletics soon after his mile record, and he went on to have a long career as a neurologist, serving for many years as the director of the National Hospital for Nervous Diseases in London. The same year Bannister set the mile record, in 1954, he won European and Commonwealth Games titles. The closest he came to winning an Olympic title was at the 1952 Games in Helsinki, Finland, Roger Bannister finished just outside the medals in fourth place in the men's 1500 meters. And that wraps up the May 6th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.